You're listening to the Hog Sports Network Daily Podcast. Now, here's your host, Matt Jones.
Hey, happy Wednesday to you. We've got a fun show lined up today as we continue to count down to Arkansas versus UAB this weekend in Fayetteville. Christina Long will join me a little bit later in studio to discuss the Razorbacks' game week preparation for the Blazers. We'll end the show today with Tom Jacobs. He's the new executive director and CEO of the College Baseball Foundation and Hall of Fame. Former Razorback is going into that Hall of Fame for the first time early next year. But first, we bring in David Crane. David is the play-by-play voice of the UAB football team. The Blazers and the Razorbacks play Saturday at 3:15 over at Razorback Stadium on SEC Network. Both teams are 1-1. And coming off of a loss last week, UAB lost 32-6 to Louisiana Monroe last Saturday night down in Louisiana. David, thanks for joining us.
My pleasure. Looking forward to the trip this weekend.
So tell us about this year's UAB team.
I'm not real sure at this point exactly what we've got. I think coming into the season, felt like the known quantity was the offense with Jacob Zeno, having had such a solid year last year at quarterback. But the question marks were really on the defensive side. It was a struggle last season to slow folks down and keep them out of the end zone for the UAB defense. So I think a lot of the attention in the offseason, recruiting, the portal, all those things, trying to beef up that side of the football. And I do think they're better. Two games, not a huge sample size, but if anything, they look better than they did. They're bigger, they're stronger, they're more of them on defense. And so I do think, despite what happened last week, I do think this defense is better. The offense looked okay in the season opener against Alcorn State and then really had a rough go of it last week against Monroe. So just a lot of questions, I think, still at this point, really on both sides of the ball. I do think Jacob Zeno and the offense will be fine at some point this season. But as always, you're mixing in new people, offensive line, trying to figure out who needs to be where, doing what. There are plenty of weapons, I think, around Jacob Zeno for him to distribute the football to. But still a work in progress very much on both sides of the ball at this point.
You mentioned Zeno, the Baylor transfer, a couple of times. Who are some of the other players to watch?
Well, they've got some, I think, a lot of depth in the running back room. That was something they were very high on coming into the season. Lee Beebe has kind of been the number one running back. Isaiah Jacobs, Lee Witherspoon, Solomon Beebe, Lee's brother. So it's a deep running back room. And then there's some explosiveness at wide receiver. Amari Thomas coming off a fantastic freshman year last season. And then Cam Shanks sort of exploded in the season opener. He had a bunch of catches and a 57-yard punt return for a touchdown. First one of those for UAB in about 11 years. So I do think the weapons are there. It's just a matter of kind of getting everybody on the same page and protecting. That was an issue. I think 5 sacks last week surrendered by the offense. Not all the offensive line's fault. Obviously, it never is. But I do think it would bear watching how well this offensive line can stand up against an SEC defense this weekend.
We spoke to Alex Mortensen on our show yesterday, the former Razorback who's the offensive coordinator there at UAB. You mentioned this. They had a real good offensive season last year. I think they were top 20 in total offense. They were top 20 in passing offense. What have been your impressions of him as a coordinator in year two?
I haven't had a chance to spend a ton of time with him. But when I've been around him, he's always so engaging and you can just tell how bright he is. When you've got a father that was in the media, you have to be a sharp guy. But I think he's got a tremendous future ahead of him. I think Trent Dilfer is incredibly high on Alex as an offensive coordinator. And I'm sure there is no one that was more frustrated and enjoyed that 5-hour bus ride home last Saturday night less than Alex did after having a good week of practice and being very excited about the opportunity. It just didn't play well. Chance to bounce back and see how they can stack up against an SEC team.
If you haven't already, our listeners, I would encourage you to go back and listen to that interview with Alex. A lot of great content. We talked about his time at Arkansas. We talked about his time with Bobby Petrino and what he learned from Coach Petrino. Talked about his years at Alabama. A lot of great stuff there with Alex. One of the things that he said, David, was that the games weren't similar, but I feel like the offensive coordinator probably would say at Arkansas too, it was similar, and Arkansas lost to Oklahoma State, and that there were a lot of self-inflicted wounds that UAB committed. I mean, there was a safety, there was an interception, just a lot of things that didn't go real cleanly for the offense last week.
Absolutely, and started with the first series of the game. UAB got the ball to start and just had an awful three and out. Went backwards, short punt, short field that Monroe was able to take advantage of and get some points on the board. And turnovers, that's maybe been the most disappointing thing, I would say, so far, the number of turnovers in the first two games. I think UAB is a -4 or something like that in the turnover margin through two games. They weren't great in that department last year, but they have had a really hard time hanging on to the football so far in the season. And when you've had a defense that has struggled to stop people, you have to play complimentary football, and that has not been the case, especially last week. The season opener, you take it for what it was worth, but last week it was absolutely the polar opposite of complimentary football between the offense and the defense.
It was a non-conference game last week, but you've got a feel for this. This was a big game for ULM. Bryant Vinson is their head coach, and for those who don't know, Bill Clark was the longtime coach at UAB. He retired in the offseason going into 2022. Vincent became the interim head coach, and then Trent Dilfer was hired after that season. Probably a big deal for Bryant Vincent to be able to beat UAB the other night the way they did.
Oh, it absolutely was, and there were a ton of connections. I think it was 14, 15, 16, something like that, either former players now playing for Monroe or former staffers that were at UAB and now at Louisiana Monroe. So a lot of familiarity between the two programs. And I do think it was an awfully big win for Bryant Vincent, awfully satisfying win for him to get his team to 2-0 and trying to really turn things around down there in Monroe. And I think he's going to do a great job. He was such an outstanding offensive coordinator for UAB, and you saw what he did, I think, out at New Mexico last year, able to really improve that offense that had struggled. So he's got his system. It's maybe not the flashiest offense you will ever see, but, boy, they're tough. They ran it for over 200 yards against UAB. It was not really a big mystery what they were going to try to do. They just outplayed the Blazers last week.
Arkansas and UAB just playing for the second time in their histories. The last time was just 10 years ago in 2014. David, I'm sure you were here for that game, 45-17. Arkansas wins, and I think the play everybody remembers from that is Sebastian Tritola, the Arkansas offensive lineman, lining up in a fake field goal formation and then throwing a touchdown to the long snapper. From your seat, what do you remember about that play?
It was a long day, long evening, I think, in Fayetteville. And you know, I was sitting yesterday starting the prep and all that and looked back and saw that it was 2014. I thought, oh, it was 10 years. It doesn't seem like it was that long ago. But a lot's happened in those last 10 years. That was Bill Clark's first season. Football would get shut down briefly after that 2014 season. So a lot has gone on, and I remember, I'll say this, I've been to Fayetteville a lot of times, and it is always one of my favorite road trips in the Southeastern Conference, and we're excited to be coming back this weekend. But it's a tough place to play. It doesn't matter if the Razorbacks were really, really good or maybe struggling a little bit. The crowd, the atmosphere, the environment has always made it one of the tougher and yet more enjoyable places to play on the road. And I'm looking forward to seeing it again and seeing the changes to Razorback Stadium.
You mentioned how much has happened at UAB, and I wanted to talk about that. After that game in 2014, you mentioned that the program gets shut down. It's restarted. You've got a beautiful new stadium that's been built in downtown Birmingham to replace Legion Field, that new practice venue that's right there off the interstate that you can see on the way down to Montgomery. a new conference. UAB joined last season. You've had some success. UAB's had some pretty good success, especially since the restart. Just tell us about the journey of shutting the program down, getting it restarted, and then not only getting it restarted, but really having some of the best years that UAB's ever had.
Yeah, it's an amazing story. I've said this many, many times. It would make a remarkable movie. I'm not sure Hollywood would believe that it's actually true, everything that happened. But you go from excitement over Bill Clark in his first year, getting UAB bowl eligible at 6-6. And then after that last regular season game the next week, the plug gets pulled on UAB football. They shut the program down. And it sort of jump-started a movement. A lot of local business leaders realized that, you know, what's good for UAB is good for Birmingham, and what's good for Birmingham is good for UAB, and UAB football is good for Birmingham and all of those things. So opened up their wallets, and that was the biggest change. There never had been a ton of financial support coming in. That changed, and some very prominent businessmen in town said, we will help bring this back. And Bill Clark said, when they started talking about trying to bring it back, he said, if you can pull this off, I'll stay. I'll hang around and we'll restart this thing. And sure enough, they raised the money, they changed their mind, they brought the program back about 6 months later. The problem was the entire roster was gone. Everybody had left. Everybody had transferred out, gone to other schools. So Bill Clark spent the next 2 years. It did not come back that next year. They took a two-year break, and Bill Clark spent those 2 years rebuilding an entire roster. And by the time they took the field again in 2017, everybody thought they would be the worst team in college football by a wide margin and would not be good for a long time, if ever. And Bill Clark had a surprise for everybody. He'd recruited pretty well for those 2 years. And not only did they turn out to not be the worst team in the world, they went to a bowl game, and after that won a couple conference championships. So it's a Hollywood type story, and it would make a remarkable movie. Folks have tried to write some books about it, but I'm not sure a screenplay has been developed yet, but it'd be worth somebody's time to try and do it.
Last year was the first year since the restart that UAB had a losing record, but it was also the first year in a new conference. So I don't know that that was really surprising to people. You're also in the first year of Trent Dilfer's tenure last year. Was it a surprise, though, when Dilfer got hired? I mean, he had no college coaching experience, not even assistant coaching experience. He'd been a head coach in Nashville at Lipscomb Academy for a little while and had won a couple of state championships there. Just tell me about the process that brought him to Birmingham and what you've seen, maybe his fingerprints on the program.
It was definitely a surprise, kind of an outside-the-box hire. Mark Ingram, the athletic director, talked to a lot of folks, and he and Trent Dilfer really hit it off in the interview process. And he has been fantastic for me. And we are announcers are a selfish lot. You know, we want to win. We like to call wins. They're a lot more fun than calling losses. Oh, yeah. But you also like to have good people to work with and people that make your job easier. And I will say Coach Dilfer, having worked at ESPN for 7 or 8 years, whatever it was, he gets my job and what I have to do and what I need from him. So he has been an absolute pleasure to work with. And there's nobody more disappointed than him that the wins haven't been as frequent as he would have liked, as we would have hoped, and maybe coming off a 7-6 season the year before. But, it's such a change. It's a totally new offense. It's a totally new defense. And recruiting, as we all know, recruiting is totally different now than it was 5 or 6 years ago with the portal and NIL and all that kind of stuff. So I do think it's going to take a little time to implement everything he wants to do the way he wants to do it and get the players in that UAB can get in and hang on to, hopefully, for more than one season. So it's a work in progress, but I think he is absolutely committed to getting it done and convinced he is the right man for the job.
You mentioned earlier that you like coming to Fayetteville. I would assume that was your days with Alabama when you've been up here?
Absolutely. Came up, you know, a good bit for football, a ton for basketball, a ton for baseball. I will say this, I won't name names. Again, as an announcer, one of the highlights is eating. We all love to eat and finding the best restaurants we can in town. And Fayetteville had, I would say, as a crew, our favorite restaurant in the entire Southeastern Conference.
You got to say a name now.
Well, I don't want to advertise for someone, but you can get some phenomenal ribs and some phenomenal steaks.
Okay. It's still there. It's still there, by the way.
I'm hoping so Friday night.
David, we appreciate your time.
Absolutely. My pleasure.
All right. Have fun this week in Fayetteville. David Crane, the UAB play-by-play voice. Razorbacks and the Blazers play this Saturday. When we come back, Christina Long will be with me on the desk to talk about Razorbacks this week, what Sam Pittman has said leading up to the game. But first, a word from our sponsors.
LPGA Week in Northwest Arkansas returns September 23rd through the 29th for the 18th consecutive year. Watch former Razorbacks and 2024 Olympians Maria Fassi and Gabby Lopez compete against the world's best female golfers at the Walmart Northwest Arkansas Championship, presented by P&G at Pinnacle Country Club in Rogers. The NWA Championship is so much more than a golf tournament, with something for everyone to enjoy and activities for fans of all ages. Daily tickets are only $10, and kids 17 and under get in free with a ticketed adult. Get your tickets today at nwachampionship.com. At Kendall King, we're proud of over four decades of design. We're continuing the legacy of great creative design by combining our brands of Kendall King, Soapbox, and ShopCart. Together, these brands represent a new focus in marketing design with individual attention to specific areas. Through our design expertise supported by a team of talented professionals, we showcase our best. We are Kendall King, we are Soapbox, we are ShopCart, we are design.
Welcome back. Thanks to David Crane for being with us. Tom Jacobs, the executive director and CEO of the College Baseball Foundation, will be joining us here shortly. We're with Christina Long right now. We'll talk about the Razorbacks and UAB coming up on Saturday. First, we want to tell you about our friends at Enhanced Healthcare Wellness Institute in Rogers. It's your source for holistic wellness and your healthy lifestyle changes. Located in Uptown Rogers, the staff at Enhanced Healthcare will target your specific health plan for wellness. From neuropathy treatment, primary care, weight loss, and so much more. You can count on the experts at Enhanced Healthcare Wellness Institute in Rogers. Razorbacks are a 24.5-point favorite now over UAB. The line opened at 21.5 earlier this week. It felt a little bit low to me, Christina. And now, you know, it seems like the bettors agree.
Yeah, that's what it seems like. I mean, it'll be an interesting game, I think. UAB is coming off a rough performance against ULM, and their just offense couldn't really get much done. They didn't score a touchdown. It's for an Arkansas defense that did perform so well against a good Oklahoma State offense, or made them look bad, especially in the areas that they're normally good, it shouldn't be a massive challenge.
Doesn't it feel weird that we talk about Arkansas? They just gave up 39 points, but yet we're saying they played really
well.
It's one of those deals where the stats just don't. The stats kind of tell the story. I mean, Oklahoma State had 385 yards of offense. They had, 59 rushing yards, I think?
Right.
But you got to pick six. You've got an overtime possession that results in a touchdown. There's the muffed punt that starts at the 25, and that results in a touchdown. I thought it was a very good performance for Travis Williams' group, given all of the circumstances.
Yeah, and I mean, when 18 of those points come off of because of the turnovers, like it's hard to do that. And I think one thing we talked about a lot is, you know, and you discussed Mike Gundy saying he felt like his team was better conditioned. I mean, the defense kind of ran out of gas because of how much they were being asked to do later in the game after all those giveaways. You know, they had to be on the field a lot more. And, you know, that's never something you want. It's not an excuse, but it is early in the year. So I think that's something that should be alleviated as they keep going, but I just think it was overall, especially what they did on Ollie Gordon. I think there's maybe been some takes that like maybe Ollie Gordon isn't that good or whatever, and I don't buy that at all. I think they had a great game plan for him and they actually were able to execute it.
Well, it's the same running back and it's the same offensive line that, you know, created an All-America Doak Walker Award season last year for him. But what I think Oklahoma State's going to have to deal with this year is that everybody's going to gun to stop Ollie Gordon. And I said this the other day, we were talking with Barry Trammell about this, I think, is that with Oklahoma State, last year, it's hard to prepare for a new running back on a week-to-week basis. But now I think what you're going to see with Oklahoma State is that teams have had the entire offseason to study what they did last year, and they've really put a lot of emphasis into slowing him down, or at least the teams that they're going to play in the first, probably month of the season, maybe 5 weeks. And they're going to have to figure out some new ways to be creative and get him open, because he didn't have a great day running the ball against South Dakota State. Had over 100 yards, but the yards per carry was a fairly low number. And then there's only been two other teams that have bottled him up like Arkansas did.
Right, and then the question for them, I think, is how much can Alan Bowman do in the passing game to kind of open that up? And, they have some great receivers. Brennan Presley was really impressive, and, they have lots of options there. But I think how his abilities as a passer will kind of be tested throughout the rest of their season.
It's interesting to me, though, that you say that Arkansas's defense wore down, because Arkansas won the possession time by almost 13 minutes.
Which is crazy.
It wasn't
like
the defense. Now, the defense was out there a lot in the second half.
Yeah.
Arkansas did not control time of possession after halftime quite like they did in the first half. I'm looking here at time of possession in the second half. Oklahoma State had it for 7:51 and for 6:45. So that's... Arkansas had it for a little bit more, but it's pretty close to a 50-50 split in the second half. But there are going to be games where Arkansas is going to be on the field defensively for a lot more than 23 minutes.
Right, that's very true. And so that's something that they need to be concerned about and they need to be working on. But yeah, I think it's that second half, and I don't know how you, and maybe they don't know how you kind of resolve those second half. The closing out games has been a problem. What do you do in a practice or during the week to make that happen,
Well, I said this the other day. I think Oklahoma State, we talked to Phil Steele about this in the preseason. He said that Oklahoma State was the number one team in the country on his experience factor, which basically means that those guys have played together more at Oklahoma State than any other team in college football. You got Arkansas with 55 new players. And again, I think you make a distinction between the program and the team. This year's team is not last year's team, even though there are some players that are still in the program. This year's team's got to figure out how to close games. I think that Saturday, people are going to lump it together with all the one-possession games. I've done it too. But it's different than last year because this is a different team. Maybe this team can be better late in games. Oklahoma State is very much the same team as a year ago. And this is five consecutive games they've won by one possession. They've been in these moments. They know how not to panic. And I thought that showed on Saturday.
Yeah, and I think them having this exposure to that, situation, when inevitably they get into situations like that in the future, hopefully this is something that they learned some things and they're prepared for it. It sounds like, I feel like the vibe in talking to Coach Pittman on Monday and talking to players yesterday seems actually more positive than I might have expected. This does not feel like, at least in the people we talk to, feel like a team that is going to, take a loss like this and let it linger or, sort of throw up their hands and go, well, it's just like last year and we're never going to be any better. It does not feel like that at all from the people that we talk to. A coach especially is never going to say like, yeah, we've given up or whatever. But it really, you can kind of feel it, especially when you talk to players. You can kind of feel what they're feeling. And I think they talked a lot yesterday about, taking the ownership of we really did beat ourselves. Somebody even asked, what did Oklahoma State do in the second half on defense to kind of slow you down a little bit? And they were like, they didn't, though. It was just us. And so it really feels like they know what the problems are, and whether or not they can fix them will be a question. And, they have to show that. But it does seem like, okay, they've taken it. They know what they need to extract from it. And now they're prepared to try and actually do that.
Want to tell you that Jordan Weber is coming to the Hogs Illustrated Sports Club. It's going to be September 18th, next Wednesday at noon at Home 2 Suites in Springdale. You can reserve your seat right now at OzarksTix.com, OzarksTix.com. Jordan Weber, the Arkansas gymnastics coach, 2012 Olympic gold medalist, and we're looking forward to talking to her. Brandon Marcello is actually going to be at the sports club today, and our plan tomorrow is to play some excerpts of our conversation with Brandon here on this podcast. So you mentioned this, and I wanted to talk about it, is that the mood feels very optimistic this week. And I think I think part of that is there are going to be people, going back to what I said a minute ago, they're going to look at this game last Saturday and they're going to say, oh, that's just more of Sam Pittman's programs not being able to close out games. And I think there's probably some validity to that. They've got to feel or they've got to learn how to close out these close games as a program. But I think there's also, I think that optimism kind of stems from the fact that people are able to say, hey, this looks like a different team than last year. When Arkansas lost last year, it just felt different. And maybe it's the fact that the offense is moving the ball this year that makes it feel different. Maybe it's the fact that people are able to understand that, hey, the defense was put into some bad situations that created some of these scoring opportunities for Oklahoma State. But when you drop a game like you did last Saturday, it's usually a lot more pessimistic feeling than I think it is this week. It just feels different to me than, say, last year when they lost BYU in a, you know, kind of a similar manner.
Yeah, I mean, I think especially a loss like that, double overtime, where you had the game in hand at halftime, you know, you blow a lead like that, it's so easy for that to become a really emotional loss and for that to kind of hang over you, and especially early for that to kind of set the tone. And we talked last week before the game about how we felt like this game was really going to set the tone, or at least I felt like this game was going to set the tone for the next few weeks and for the first, you know, half of the season. But I actually, and I feel like it did, but I actually think it set a better tone than I thought it might. I don't feel like they came out of this, like you said, they lost on paper, you know, in a way similar to last year in that it was a close game. But when you look at how they lost, it wasn't the same because of how much better the offense looks. And I think you're right that that's where a lot of the optimism is coming from. Now, they do, you know, the silly mistakes, the things like that, like they have to fix that and they have to show progress in that. It's not like... just, I don't want to pretend that, you know, oh, they showed some good thing. I don't want to play the like moral victories game too much, because they do still have to then take those things and learn from them and have to show that they have done that. And, you know, I came off covering a Clemson team that every week it was, yeah, we beat ourselves. We had a million turnovers, but we really, you know, look how good our offense is. Look how many yards we had. And that kept happening. And they kept falling into the same traps and making the same silly mistakes. So that can happen. And Arkansas has to avoid that.
They've got to learn from what happened over in Stillwater last weekend. I mentioned 24.5-point spread for Saturday's game. That's moved up by 3 points since it opened at 21.5 points earlier in the week. The ESPN FPI is holding pretty steady at 92.7% chance for Arkansas to win. So this is going to be a game that the Razorbacks win, and if they don't, Lord help us next week. But I think they need to win it by quite a bit, Christina, to get some momentum on their side going into those next two games when they go back onto the road against Auburn and Texas A&M, because both of those games feel winnable right now for Arkansas. I mean, there's so much about the quarterback position. Like, if you put Talen Green up against Peyton Thorne, I think you'd take Talen Green right now. If you put Kalen Green up against Connor Wigman, last year I might have taken Wigman because he was in Petrino's offense. I don't think Wigman is a very good fit right now for Colin Klein's offense at A&M. These games feel winnable, but in order to feel good about yourself going into Auburn next week, I think that you've got to be able to take care of UAB the way people expect you to take care of this team.
For sure. And I think part of it will be, you know, they dominate UAPB the way that they should. They score on every drive, which is crazy. They're probably not going to do that against UAB, but UAB is a Group of Five team that went, 4-8 last year? You know, like, yes. This is an opponent that they should beat handily. And I think they have to show that they can, because of the fact that their one win so far was against a team, you know, that's an easy one to write off. It's like, oh, you know, it was UAPB. And so you could do that a little bit with UAB, but you need to be able to show that you can take care of business. You can't fall into the same traps. You can't beat yourself against a team like this. You know, it's just, it's crazy, these games that should be, you know, these cupcake games or whatever, like how we've seen it in the last couple weeks, teams losing them and beating themselves on them. So, I mean, it's just, they have to do what they're expected to do to gain that confidence back, setting the tone into these very winnable SEC games.
Did you hear Trent Dilfer's comments about Petrino earlier in the week?
No, I saw he talked about him a lot, but I didn't read exactly what he said. Yeah, he had a long
He kept
answer.
Calling him the puppet master.
That's hilarious.
Like, I mean, 3 or 4 times in one soundbite. That lasted for, you know, probably about 90 seconds.
That's so funny.
It was the same soundbite where he said that Petrino deserves to be on the Mount Rushmore of college offensive coordinators. Wow. He kept calling him the puppet master.
They need to play Master of Puppets when he walks out.
Jimmy Sanchez is the one who runs the board on Saturdays at Razorback Stadium. I hope Jimmy's, you know, he's clever enough that he probably has already thought this, but I don't know when you play it. I mean, they're not going to play it right
after.
This isn't Colorado. They're
and it's not,
play
a head coach where they walk out, you know, yeah. like, because Sam has like a walkout. They play something. They play Jukebox Hero
Jukebox
or whatever.
Hero.
So it's like, can you upstage that with like a Bobby Petrino walkout moment? I don't know.
Maybe. You know, it's not like Colorado. Do you see the news this week where they're going to make them play a little snippet of Shador Sanders?
Right. I was listening to a podcast about this morning while I was getting ready, and they were talking about, like, somebody, a blogger had written that, you know, they had told the band not to play the fight song or whatever, so they play Shitters. And apparently the athletic department had to like make a statement about like, no, nobody's told them not to play the fight song, but they do take a little, they do have to pause
to play Shador Sanders song,
and then they can start the fight
song. Do they care about winning at Colorado? Or is it all about the show?
Yeah, it might be.
Man alive. Stay on top of all Razorback sports with a digital subscription to the Hogs Illustrated app. 20-plus issues a year of our Hogs Illustrated magazine. That includes the basketball preview that's coming up here pretty soon. Complete access to all of our website at wholehogsports.com. Monthly subscriptions begin at $17. You can join now at hogsillustrated.com/subscribe or call 479-684-5509. Christina's got the new magazine here. It's got Travis Williams on the cover. Ethan did a great job with this cover story on Travis Williams this week, the Razorback defensive coordinator. He talked to Travis. He talked to a lot of people who are around him, and that's a pretty fascinating read.
Yeah, it's really more about Travis and his own background. He has a really interesting story, just how he grew up, you know, the people that have influenced him, and then, you know, his family. His wife is expecting, I think she's due like this weekend,
like
when he told
us
a few weeks ago. Yeah, so so he's supposed to have his fourth daughter soon, and, you know, so talking about him as a father of three daughters and, you know, the way that their family has adjusted to his coaching life, you know, that's always something that's difficult for coaching families. So he's a really interesting guy, and I think Ethan had a good time getting to know him.
Christina, appreciate it. You can, again, you can go to hogsillustrated.com/subscribe right now to see that magazine. When we come back, Tom Jacobs, who is the CEO and executive director of the College Baseball Foundation and Hall of Fame, will join us to talk about the exciting times that are going on for his organization. Also, Jeff King, the former Razorback, going in to the Hall of Fame in February. But first, another word from our sponsors.
Taste, sip, sample, and discover the very best restaurants and chefs Northwest Arkansas has to offer at the Bite Experience at the LPGA, a unique culinary experience on site at the Northwest Arkansas Championship. Tickets are available Friday, September 27th through Sunday, September 29th, offering access to the best golf viewing and food and beverage samples from over 30 local restaurants. You don't want to miss this. Tickets are available for $45 a day. Get yours before they sell out at BiteNWA.com. At Kendall King, we're proud of over four decades of design. We're continuing the legacy of great creative design by combining our brands of Kendall King, Soapbox, and ShopCart. Together, these brands represent a new focus in marketing design, with individual attention to specific areas. Through our design expertise supported by a team of talented professionals, we showcase our best. We are Kendall King, we are Soapbox, we are ShopCart, we are design.
Hey, welcome back. We want to tell you about our friends over at Bentonville Glass. They've been serving their community since 1971. They're committed, professional, and versatile. If you're looking for a quality leader in Northwest Arkansas or looking for skilled craftsmanship, look no further than Bentonville Glass for all your glass market needs with the highest quality products. Come by and see them right now at 507 South Main in Bentonville or online at bentonvilleglass.com. We're joined now by Tom Jacobs. He is the executive director of the and CEO of the College Baseball Foundation and Hall of Fame, just recently announced to that position. And we've got Tom on because the headline is that Jeff King, the former Razorback third baseman, a great Razorback from 1984 to 86, is going to be inducted to the College Baseball Hall of Fame in February, and Jeff will be the first Razorback inducted into that Hall of Fame. Tom, first off, congratulations on the new role, and thanks for joining us.
Oh, thank you, Matt. Happy to be here.
This so for people who don't know what's going on, I've been following this probably since start of the year, I think, is when the announcement was made that the College Baseball Foundation is going to have a permanent home for the first time. This has been a Hall of Fame that has been in existence since 2006, but there's really been no permanent home. Now there's going to be one. I think next year is the target date to have a new facility finished in Overland Park, Kansas. That's just outside of Kansas City. tell us about how all of this has come about, and it seems like it's a real exciting time for your organization.
Oh my gosh, Matt. Yeah, it's super, super exciting. First of all, congratulations to Jeff on his selection into the Hall of Fame. We're looking forward to welcoming him and 10 others into the Hall of Fame next February. But yeah, very, very exciting how all this came about. As you mentioned, the organization has been in existence since 2004, the College Baseball Hall of Fame, which is under the umbrella of the College Baseball Foundation since 2006. And since that time, we've inducted 164 people into the College Baseball Hall of Fame. We have 11 more that'll be going in this year. But it's been a virtual Hall of Fame, if you will. We've had no permanent structure or facility. And so one of the things that we embarked on a couple of years ago was, and again, not from lack of effort over those 20 years or so. And, you know, there were some different fits and starts along the way. But about 2 years ago, you know, we decided, look, let's partner with a third party, an outside entity that's going to help us do a request for proposals. We did that. We had a number of really, really good proposals from all over the country. We narrowed that field down. We conducted site visits. Ultimately, Overland Park, Kansas, and specifically the museum at Prairie Fire, which is an existing museum there in southern Johnson County, was selected as the site. We made that announcement back on January 23rd. And again, we're very excited about that. There's, museum ready space that is going to be available for us to move into. And what we've done now is we've gone through a similar RFP process to select an architectural design firm that we're going to partner with to do the actual design and build out of the Hall of Fame space. So like I said, we went through a similar process. We narrowed that down to a few finalists, did in-person interviews with those finalists back in Overland Park at the end of May. And, just announced last week that Populous has been selected. That's who we're going to be partnering with. We've actually begun work with them already, and kind of the conceptual and initial idea phase of all of this, and couldn't be more excited because first and foremost, it's going to be a home for those 164 individuals, soon to be 175, that have been inducted into the Hall of Fame to be able to, share their stories, be able to create a lasting legacy for all of them, but also a celebration of all things college baseball. So we're very excited about that. And, we're looking right now at probably an opening in first quarter of 2026. So we've got a lot of work to do between now and then to make that a reality.
I have heard that Omaha was interested. I think maybe Baton Rouge was another town that there was some interest there. Why was Overland Park the right place?
Well, I think for us, Overland Park was the right place for a number of reasons. First of all, the College Baseball Foundation and the College Baseball Hall of Fame represents all of college baseball. So NCAA Division I, II, and III, NAIA, the junior colleges. And we felt that with its central location, it's a large, obviously, metropolitan city that has, big support for the sport of baseball, obviously with the Royals there, with the Negro Leagues Hall of Fame and Museum that's located there in Kansas City as well. Not to mention, having that space already available. So it wasn't something that needed to be built from the ground up. The space was already there and available. We've got terrific partners, with the folks at Visit Overland Park and also with the museum at Prairie Fire. There are within a stone's throw of the space, I mean, literally hundreds of youth baseball, softball, soccer fields, complexes that, are filled with teams every weekend on a regular basis, not to mention, all the different tournaments and teams that are traveling and going through there as well. So we just felt that, you know, with the combination of all of those factors, that it was the right home for the College Baseball Hall of Fame.
You mentioned the Negro League Museum. You've also got the College Basketball Hall of Fame, you know, in downtown Correct. Kansas City. This is becoming kind of a popular spot for sports museums to gather.
Absolutely. And the really exciting thing about that, and we have a great relationship with Bob Kendrick, you know, who runs the Negro Leagues Museum. And, you know, they've been fully supportive of our efforts. And, you know, we'll be looking forward to working with them as well to, you know, do some cross promoting and again, you know, have that as a destination for certainly those that live in the area, those visiting the area, that's a must see on their bucket list is to, you know, visit, you know, both the Negro Leagues Museum and then also the College Baseball Hall of Fame.
We had Jay Black on our show several weeks ago. He's the curator for the Southwest Conference Hall of Fame, which is inside the Texas Sports Hall of Fame in Waco. Help me understand, is this kind of a similar concept, because it's going to be part of an existing museum, the museum at Prairie Fire, but you're building a new wing and a new facility onto an existing museum. Help us understand that.
Yeah, great question, Matt. So it's already existing space, so it's not a new wing or space that's being or constructed or built. It's roughly, you know, 10,000, a little bit less than 10,000 square feet of space. That we'll be moving into. And, you know, it'll be a combination, as I said, first and foremost, it's a home for our Hall of Famers. We also have a number of annual awards that are under the umbrella of the College Baseball Foundation, as you're probably aware. So, you know, those will be on display along with, you know, who the previous award winners have been and highlighting those, you know, highlighting each year's national champions. But also, you know, telling the story and the history of college baseball, and not only from a static perspective, but we want this to be immersive and engaging as well. And so, you know, we're, you know, talking about in this conceptual phase with Populous, a number of those different thoughts and ideas to really make this, you know, an attraction that people will want to come back to, you know, time and time again.
Talking with Tom Jacobs, the executive director and CEO of the College Baseball Foundation and Hall of Fame, about the new Hall of Fame exhibit that's opening in Overland Park, Kansas. Jeff King is one of 11 individuals who are going to be inducted in February. King batted .372 with 42 home runs, 204 RBI. Was a two-time All-American during his Arkansas playing career. Was the first overall pick of the 1986 Major League Baseball draft. There's some great names that he's going in here with. You've got Roger Clemens, the former Texas pitcher, obviously. Everybody knows Rocket. Mike Schmidt, who was a standout shortstop for many years in the major leagues, played at Ohio. Mark Teixeira, a great college player at Georgia Tech, who had a long pro career. I think it goes to show, Tom, that even though you've been in existence for almost two decades now, there's still a very significant backlog of deserving individuals who are going to get into this.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, in some ways we're playing a little bit of catch up, but, you know, again, as I mentioned, there's 164 that have been inducted already. Mm-hmm. You know, it's an annual process headed up by Mike Gustafson on our board of directors. And Mike was, by the way, one of the original founders of the College Baseball Foundation, along with several others in Lubbock, Texas. And yeah, so there's a, you know, as you mentioned, it's a very stellar class that's going in this year with players, coaches, you know, former umpire, et cetera. And something that, you know, we'll look to continue to build, and especially having the physical presence in the home to be able to have all of, you know, the accomplishments of these Hall of Famers on display and being able to tell their stories moving forward. And, you know, you mentioned about, I think the, was it the Southwest Conference that's part of the, you know, Texas Hall of Fame. And, you know, similarly, we have really just a treasure trove, unbelievable collection of memorabilia over the years, as you can probably imagine. And, you know, all of that is, you know, currently housed in the Southwest Collection there on the campus of Texas Tech University. And so, again, we'll be able to have certainly a lot of, you know, the different memorabilia, historical artifacts on display We'll also be able to rotate, you know, some of those items through, you know, depending on, you know, different themes that we might have or different highlights or spotlights that we might be, you know, utilizing, you know, there in the Hall of Fame. You know, for example, you know, the NAIA basketball tournament takes place in Kansas City every March. Well, that might be a great opportunity while that's going on to have a highlight or spotlight on NAIA baseball and have a lot of those artifacts and memorabilia on display during that time. So again, we're very excited about all this and super excited, you know, in the partnership with Populous and really getting this whole process underway of, okay, we've got this great location, we've got this great space. What's it gonna, you know, what's gonna be in that space? What's it gonna look like? And that's the really fun and exciting part that we're working on right now.
February 13th will be the Night of Champions at the College Baseball Foundation and Hall of Fame. Hagan Smith is going to be recognized on that night, by the way, for winning the National Pitcher of the Year Award as given out by the foundation. They also give out the Brooks Wallace Award for the best shortstop, the John Olerud Award for the best two-way player, some other awards that are given out as well. Is that an event that's open to the public in February?
Absolutely it is, yeah. We've been doing a in-person Night of Champions for a number of years now. Obviously, during the pandemic, you know, we had to do that virtually for a couple of years. But for the last 2 years, we've been back in person. We were in Overland Park last year because that was after the announcement was made that Overland Park was going to be the home for the College Baseball Hall of Fame. Mm-hmm. We'll be back there again this year and on a regular basis moving forward. But yeah, absolutely. You know, we're in a space that probably accommodates upwards of about 500 people for this night. We had, you know, great attendance last year. We had a full room. There'll be information that will be on our website here shortly regarding information about this year's Night of Champions. If somebody wants to purchase a table or even an individual ticket, it's absolutely open to the general public and just a really fun and exciting night. And you know, such a deserving way for, you know, these guys to be inducted into the Hall of Fame.
So players have to wait 15 years to get into the Hall of Fame. Coaches have to wait 2 years after retirement or be 75 years old. Are there other criteria?
Those are the main things. And as you mentioned, we do have some different category. You know, you mentioned that, you know, we've been doing this for close to 20 years now. So we've got a little bit of a catch up perhaps to do, and we want to make sure that, you know, we're representative of, again, all of college baseball, not just Division I, but certainly all the different years and eras as well. So we do have some different categories along those lines, you know, based on if you played, you know, prior to a certain year or following a certain year, and those types of things, just to make sure that we do have a cross section of representation, not only across the different divisions and organizations, NCAA, NAIA, junior colleges, but also the different eras as well.
Are you a voter?
I am a voter. Yeah.
What do you look for?
Well, I look for, you know, and I think it's true with everybody, and we have, you know, I think as you're probably aware, Matt, I think, you know, we've got over 190 plus folks that are voters as a part of this. So not only, you know, those that are a part of the Board of Trustees for the College Baseball Foundation, but certainly, you know, folks around the country as well. And, you know, really looking for, and again, even though we have, you know, I think with Mike Schmidt's induction, there'll be, that'll make 12 that have been inducted into both the College Baseball Hall of Fame and Cooperstown. Mm-hmm. But a professional career or accomplishments at the major league level is not a criteria, you know, for selection into the College Baseball Hall of Fame. I mean, it's predicated, mm-hmm. you know, what you did during your college career, either as a player, as a coach, as an umpire, as a contributor, those types of things. And so really, you know, just looking for those things that really stand out, you know, kind of above and beyond. And as we all know, baseball certainly is a great sport and lends itself to, you know, all of the different statistical, you know, comparisons. So certainly taking a look at all of those factors, but then also just, you know, accomplishments, you know, were they a player of the year nationally? Were they a player of the year in their conference? You know, did they make appearances in the national championship at their respective levels? How did they do, you know, at those different levels? So those are all the different factors, you know, that go into, you know, to that decision-making process, I think, for all the voters.
Kansas City's a town that certainly has a huge influence on Razorback baseball. It's where Dave Van Horn's from. It seems like it's where just about every player or a lot of the really good players that the Razorbacks have had over the last 10 years. And it's a nice little pit stop on the way to Omaha for the College World Series, and the Razorbacks seem to find their way up there quite a bit, not too far away from the interstate. Tom, we appreciate you being with us today and giving us some information about this. This is a pretty cool time for you.
No, thanks so much, Matt. I really enjoyed the conversation, and yeah, as your Razorback fans are driving to Omaha, they'll have to make sure they stop and visit the College Baseball Hall of Fame either on the way up there or back.
Looking forward to it. Looking forward to getting up there and seeing what you guys are building. Thank you.
Thanks so much, Matt.
Tom Jacobs, the Executive Director and CEO of the College Baseball Foundation and Hall of Fame. Thank you for joining us, Tom. Also, thank you for joining us today on our podcast. We'll be back with another podcast on Thursday. We're going to talk to Jared Schramm. He's the Vice President of the Texas Rangers Event Management. We'll talk to them about Arkansas's games coming up at Globe Life Field next year. And we look forward to seeing you then. Until then, hope you come to our website at wholehogsports.com. Have a great day, everyone.